are taking orders from their American and Zionist masters.
As 2022 draws to an end, so do all efforts for a peaceful solution. However, as the humanitarian situation continues to grow worse by the day in Yemen, the military option could be the only option left on the table.
The Yemeni government, based in the capital Sana'a, has proved that it has the military capability to hit long-range targets in land and at sea. However, it is still keen to reach a political solution and end the conflict that has taken the lives of tens of thousands of innocent people. Yusuf Maudi, Sana'a.
About 70 officials and representatives of think tanks and research centers from 36 countries are in Tehran to attend the Tehran Dialogue Forum 2022. The initiative, dubbed Neighborhood Policy of the Islamic Republic of Iran, is the third of its kind, and this time it focuses on regional friendship and trust building.
The main message of this forum is boosting regional cooperation and dialogue. We always welcome dialogue, particularly when it comes to finding solutions to the challenges that we face.
The keynote speakers of the forum, former Iranian Foreign Minister Kamal Kharrazi, the former Prime Minister of Iraq Adel Abdel Mahdi, the Nicaraguan Foreign Minister Denis Ronaldo Moncada, and other participants reiterated the same stance, giving Iran credit for the initiative.
This is important in order to strengthen your policy in the regional dimension due to the new dimension in the whole world and new world order that is much more focused on regionalism than as on the wide international arena.
Pakistan and Iran are the only two countries that are always directly affected by Afghanistan. So I think the Tehran Dialogue Forum is very important in that regard, that there has to be regional dialogue. And Iran being at the forefront of this is a welcoming development. And I think, look, it's important for the region to take ownership. And we see Iran doing that through this forum. And I think it's important, again, to discuss through dialogue to move forward towards any cooperation.
The message of the forum, however, is not limited to regional countries.
We can only really build peace if we do it through dialogue and with the diversity of participation. So I think we are grateful for the invitation to Venezuela, and we think it's important to address this. Even though we're not from the region of Iran, we also think in regional terms. Venezuela is part of Latin America and the Caribbean. We are a zone of peace, as we decreed it in 2014. And we think that it is important for the different regions of the world to establish communication and see how we can really face common challenges.
The first and second rounds of the Tehran Dialogue Forum were held in 2019 and 2020. And as always, addressing the latest developments in West Asia will be on top of the agenda.
The discussions of the Tehran Dialogue Forum 2022 will continue in four different panels, focusing on regional security, energy security, the Ukraine crisis, and the prospects of peace in Afghanistan. Yusumisha Ahmadi, Tehran.
The first Iranian-made particle accelerator. The high-tech device produces high-energy beams by accelerating electrons close to the speed of light. Developed by Iran's Nuclear Science and Technology Research Institute, the Dynamitron-type accelerator was unveiled at the Atomic Energy Organization of Iran on Saturday.
We aim to generate 20% of the country's electricity from nuclear energy and the use of radiation technology. We focused on various accelerators and radiation systems, which can serve a wide range of needs in society. It's a technology that improves the health sector and can be used in food security and environmental preservation.
The Iranian accelerator will be used for food irradiation, cable and wire manufacturing, tire industries, sewage treatment, and sterilization of medical devices. The AEOI says the machine will also be employed in treating cancer patients.
The applications of this technology are numerous, but compared to developed countries, we have stepped into the field of particle accelerators about 50 years later. In fact, we have possessed this technology for a long time, but it was limited to research purposes.
Particle accelerators were first invented in the 1960s to study high-energy particle collisions, but it didn't take scientists long to notice their byproduct, and that is an extremely bright light that can be used in investigating the structure of crystals and proteins, monitoring air pollution, studying disease mechanisms, HD imaging, and cancer radiation therapy, among other applications.
With a wide range of applications, from medicine to agriculture, the homegrown accelerator, as put by its developers, will transform different industries in Iran. Experts here say for sanctions-hit Iran, building such a high-tech device is more than an achievement, but a miracle. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Afghan people have been calling for transparent and impartial investigations into crimes and wrongdoings by NATO forces on their soil. Among them, relatives of victims of the NATO war in southern Helmand province are demanding justice for the killing of 54 unarmed people by British Special Air Service troops there. The dead include children. Afghans want the murderers should be held accountable.
Helmand province witnessed deadly night raids and airstrikes by NATO forces, especially those of the UK. Besides, civilian captives were tortured and shot dead. In one case, children were thrown off military planes. I remember so many atrocities by the foreign forces in which civilians were harmed. We call for those British and American perpetrators to be tried in an impartial and transparent court. They should be brought to account and victims should receive compensation.
However, the UK government has announced the start of an inquiry into wrongdoings by its forces in Afghanistan, but some experts say only transparent probes by independent bodies can help make headway with the case. They believe investigations by foreign governments could cover up the facts about the gross violations at the hands of their forces in Afghanistan. During the two-decade US invasion, Afghanistan witnessed much disgrace by NATO troops. More and more facts are emerging regarding unlawful killings and gross violations by foreign forces on Afghan soil. The U.S. war on Afghanistan has left many Afghans in great suffering. People here are calling for accountability and justice for years of gross violation by the NATO troops. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
Family members of the victims of the Itaewon tragedy and thousands of their supporters remembered those 158 mostly young people whose lives were taken in a crowd crush October 29th. Some read letters to their lost loved ones.
Last year, we made a whole bunch of snow ducks all around outside our apartment. Please come and see me in my dreams sometimes. Please come see me someday. Maybe even as my future child. I love you forever, Seon.
Although tens of thousands were gathered, police did not manage the crowds and ignored emergency calls hours before the deadly crush. Among those who perished in the tragedy, 26 of them were foreigners. Five of those were Iranian. And like many of the young people who died that evening, they were students who visited South Korea to get more experience in the world and primarily more education to better themselves. Victims' families want the truth and those responsible brought to justice. A class action lawsuit is suing the government, which has often deflected responsibility and blamed the victims. It reminds some of the ferry sinking in 2014, in which more than 300 people died.
The law should be a law to punish wrong people, but the government is humiliating, insulting, and degrading the victims and the families of the deceased. In the end, I think this happened because the Sewol ferry accident was not properly resolved.
Tonight marked the 49th day since the tragedy, signifying the end of the mourning period, when the spirit of those dead to be reborn reaches Buddha and bliss. Frank Smith, Seoul.
This is IRIB English Radio. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en.
Supplication on Saturdays. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Bismillah, words that seekers of sanctuary repeatedly recite. Words that the very cautious in search of protection often repeat. I seek refuge with Allah, the Exalted above all. From the oppression of the unjust, from the deceitful malice the envious use to lay snares and traps, from the injustice and outrage of the tyrants, and I sing his praise. Do better and go beyond other praisers. O Allah, thou art one, has no partner, and is the Lord Master without being made. There is no discrepancy or nonsense in thy commands, nor there is lawlessness in thy kingdom. I beseech thee to send blessings on Muhammad, thy servant, thy messenger. To let me ask thee for enlightenment and inspiration, so as to be thankful for thy bounties, which alone get thy approval ultimately. To help me to obey thee, and instinctively worship thee, and make me deserve thy rewards on account of thy very patronage. And have mercy on me, and prevent me from breaking in the bounds of thy prohibitions, as far as I am kept alive, and show the way unto that which is useful and advantageous till I go on survive. To let me take to heart the meanings of thy book, and by its reading, throw down the heavy burden of sins, and receive welfare and salvation as a gift. Let not my family and friends who love me leave me alone. Let thy favors reach me in abundance during the remainder of my life, exactly as they used to be made available for me in full in the days gone by. O the Most Merciful.
Us out from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Last week, Peru's President Pedro Castillo was removed from office. His charge, quote, rebellion, which came after he announced that he would shut down Congress. Enter Castillo's Vice President Dina Boluarte, who was sworn in as the new president, becoming the first female head of state in Peru's history. In this edition of The Spotlight, we will look at what has happened in Peru and whether the U.S., who has shown support for the coup and the new president, had any role in it. First, let me introduce our guests for this edition of The Spotlight. Arnold August joins us. He's an author and journalist from Montreal. Also joining us is Libra Sankar, who's a contributor at the Troika Collective, joining us from Miami.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Welcome to you both. Libra Sankar, I'll start with you. If you can please tell us, in so many words, what has happened in Peru? What did Pedro Castillo do to be dealt the harsh hand that he has been dealt with at this point?
So what we have happening in Peru is not anything new to the history. Peruvian politics have unfortunately developed into what is happening today. So what happens? Pedro Castillo represents the indigenous community. He comes from a working class background, and he represents a move towards a Peru that acknowledges the role of working class people, of indigenous people. And so he poses a threat to the working class, or he poses a threat to the far right people that come from like Fujimori and the Fujimoristas. He also was pushing for a new constitution, which is one of the platforms that he ran on and got high approval for. And so Pedro Castillo represents what the far right fears, which is Peru moving towards a working class politic that benefits the working class people of Peru and the indigenous people of Peru. And this is a very scary thing, which is why a coup has been orchestrated. What Pedro Castillo was pushing for in dissolving Congress is nothing new. In fact, the president prior to him did it, and many other presidents have done it. It's part of their constitution that a president can dissolve Congress if they feel they're not able to move forward. And so Pedro Castillo, unfortunately, is part of a larger plan to continue destabilizing Peru so that U.S. corporations and people like the U.S. ambassador can continue to take advantage of the of Peru as a mineral-rich country and a country that is full of working-class people.
Okay, very good. We're going to get to some of those points a little later, but first, trying to understand how Peru has unraveled at the speed that it has, Arnold August, and our guest there mentioned something that is very key in this, and that is the fact that, you know, this is not anything new, what Pedro Castillo did, which was, in essence, to be more concrete here, it was Article 134 that is something that he enacted, which was only going to be a temporary closure from what we understand, in which the president said new congressional elections would then be held as soon as possible. So are we to take the fact that what was then done to him was part of, as our guest there mentioned, of a bigger plan to oust him?
Yes, of course. I'm quite sure right after he got elected,
I'm sure that the United States and their allies in Europe and Canada started to go into action in order to plan what we call lawfare, that is using juridical or so-called legal means to overthrow the elected president. And, you know, we just discussed, you know, the question of the United States' role. I mean, the day before his arrest and the coup took place, the day before, the American embassy in Peru actually met with the opposition. So they are directly involved in that. And I think that the fact that he dissolved the Congress, I perfectly believe it is a correct decision, while some, you know, middle of the roaders are saying, well, we oppose what happened to him, but the fact that he dissolved the Congress was not right. It was right, because right now, who has the last word on this? It should be the people in the streets. And the people in the streets in Peru right now are calling for a constituent assembly. That is to replace that Congress. So that decision was right, I think, legally, morally, and also historically, because it opens up a new path for the people in the street. And we saw, when we discussed these type of governments before at Press TV, I always presented the position that we cannot, you know, whether it's the left, part of the left tide or not, I always was always of the opinion we cannot concentrate on the personalities who won elections, for example, Boric in Chile, and now Castillo in Peru. What we have to look at is the larger picture. Where did Castillo come from? He came from a mass movement of indigenous workers. He himself is a teacher. And that what brought him into power. And that is why on the ground now, that you were talking about the left, the pink tide. The pink tide in Peru is happening right now.
Indeed. Well, tell us your reaction, if you can, Libra Sankara, to the a move that the VP, Dina Boluarte, made and then became the president, where she accused the president of, I don't want to call him the former president, but it appears that way for now, Castillo, of a coup attempt. And then basically it just happened a few hours later, from what we understand, where she became the president. She was sworn in. I mean, why would she be the one chosen for this, do you think? And at this point, obviously, we're seeing the backlash on the streets. So is that a miscalculation on the part of the grand scheme of things?
I think what we have is betrayal. The ambassador of the U.S. met with Dina Boluarte, the so-called president of Peru. And given the trajectory of Peruvian politics, it's also highly unlikely that she herself is going to last until the 2026 elections. And again, Pedro Castillo is the only democratically elected president. The people did not elect Dina Boluarte to lead them. And I think this speaks to the move and the direction that Peru was trying to go into. The comrade just spoke about pink tide. And I think what we see happening in Latin America right now is the U.S. trying to impose unipolarity. And we see pink tide 2.0 coup and coup attempts. This is happening in Peru. They're using lawfare in Argentina, and they're trying to do another coup in Bolivia. And all these happen to be countries that are moving further to the left. So Dina Boluarte is just a pawn in the larger grand scheme of the U.S. trying to maintain its exploitative relationship to countries like Peru, that if they are to develop for the Peruvian masses of people, the indigenous Peruvians, the working class Peruvians, that Peru could in fact stand on its own two feet and not have to be dependent on the U.S. In this very parasitic, exploitative relationship. And Europe is just as guilty in this as well. Europe is guilty because they're playing more of from the corporate side of things. Their corporations, the mining, are all corporations that are in Europe, and as well as the U.S. It's kind of like a joint venture.
So many people have referred to the EU being a vassal state of the U.S. Let's look into the situation more with the U.S. interference, Arnold August, as both of you have indicated that that occurred. Now, Arnold August, you said that just a day earlier, before this went down, you had the U.S. ambassador meet with the opposition. And we also understand that a day before, U.S. ambassador, who is a former CIA agent, also met with, the defense minister, from what we understand, a retired brigadier general, which then, we understand, he ordered the military to turn against Castillo. So this is not something that has happened in a matter of just 24, 48 hours. As both of you have indicated, in a sense, this is a scheme, a plan that the U.S., in conjunction with different players within Peru's political apparatus, had planned before. Am I correct to look at it that way?
Yes, I think that's absolutely correct. And you and our guest just mentioned the United States and other actors such as Europe. Allow me to point out to another actor that is much more vigorous in support of the coup than the Europeans, and that is Canada. You know, Canada is right from the start took the following position, saying they issued a one-sentence statement saying Canada would like to express its deep concern over Castillo's attempt to dissolve Congress and establish a government of exception in Peru. Such destabilizing actions risk jeopardizing Peru's adherence to democracy. And if that is not enough, another statement from Canada came out the day later. Canada calls for calm and invites all actors. That's a very famous line from Canada, all actors. When the revolt was taking place in Chile a couple of years ago, and it was obvious the use of the army and the Carabineros in actually killing and maiming people, they always call for all actors to avoid tensions and all that. Now, I cannot help myself to make the comparison. While the Trudeau government jumps right from start one, run from game one, the first day, in opposing the demonstrations of millions of people in Peru, indigenous workers, against the coup. In Iran, they support the U.S.-led riots that are taking place in Iran. So I think it's important for people to really have a good grasp of the dirty role that Canada plays through Justin Trudeau as the most faithful ally of U.S. imperialism, not only in Latin America, but internationally.
Sure. Well, they have played destructive roles when we go through the different actions that have been executed, with U.S. being in the lead in many of them. But before we get to that, let's look at some of the reactions, Libre Sankara, of Latin American leaders, because you have many of the governments. At last count, there were seven of them, where you have Mexico, Argentina, Bolivia, Colombia, Honduras, Venezuela, Cuba, and some other nations at this point, who have criticized and refused to recognize Peru's unelected coup regime, as they have called it. Is that going to make a difference in the fate of Peru and where it's headed when you have this opposition of this magnitude?
I think what it symbolizes is a shift towards multipolarity, a shift away from U.S. Imperialism and its role in Latin America in general. I think things like this will become more frequent. I don't know that it will have tangible presence in Peru itself. I think the Peruvian people, the ronderos that come from these indigenous communities that helped to have this historical victory to elect Pedro Castillo as president, I think between them and Peru Libre and other left factions in Peru will ultimately play the most important roles. But I think what these statements help do is to help the Peruvian people understand that they have the solidarity of other countries. I don't know that these countries are going to send any real firm resources to help help Peruvians fight against this. But I also see countries like Mexico trying to talk with the government to offer Pedro Castillo asylum. In fact, when he realized what was happening, he tried to go to the Mexican embassy And he was barred from doing that by his security detail. And shortly after, he was detained. And so we have to be very vigilant of what's going to continue to happen. Unfortunately, more Peruvians are going to be killed because, again, they democratically elected Pedro Castillo. They want him in office. They are going out into the streets, but this is being met by the far right that has no problem killing people, that has no problem harming its own citizens to maintain its own greedy benefit that these far right Fujimorista type of people hope to continue. They want to continue being in positions of power and exploiting their own people and getting business deals. And so the seven countries, and I'm sure there will be more to follow, are simply showing their solidarity with the working class people. Hopefully that shows up in tangible ways. But as in the foreseeable future, it doesn't look like they're going to send any material things. This is symbolic, and it's helpful to build morale, but that's about it.
Okay, well, Arnold August, our guest, also mentioned the pink tide. And we've seen what has happened in the past couple of years in terms of the political landscape that is characterized by the term pink tide, where you have these left-wing presidents pretty much come into power because they are the ones that actually represent the true people out in the broad economy and society of the different countries that they represent. I mean, one of the most, prolific ones would be the Brazilian President Lula da Silva that came out in some sense, and him winning the presidency was very, was an eye-opener, I would guess, from the U.S. perspective, because he made one announcement, and that was how he wants there to be a move away from the dollar. He wants the local economies of each country to deal in their national currencies. Are we looking at this to have ticked off the U.S., this new wave of left-wing presidents, as they say, and therefore they are now counter-reacting to that?
Yes, I would say so. I just add, both of you rightly mentioned all of the presidents and leaders of the Latin American countries that took a firm stand publicly in support of Castillo. I would add one other book that just came out, I think, yesterday, and that is ALBA, which includes many countries, including in the small Caribbean island. In terms of the current situation, I think aside from what happened to Cristina Kirchner a couple of weeks ago, this attempt here is the first attempt of a coup since the election of Lula in Brazil. You know, I think that is going to make a big difference. Brazil, of course, as everyone knows, it's a major player in Latin America, and through BRICS, it has important ties with other important countries such as China, India, South Africa, and Russia. And the way China is now increasingly making its presence felt on the international scale with regards to other countries, for example, just a few days ago, making a clear statement in support of the right of Palestine to its own state with its capital in East Jerusalem. The United States might have some surprises, as not only the countries in Latin America that perhaps feel more confident, more bold since the election of Brazil, but even internationally, this may build up further, and it may be a very hard situation for the United States and its allies to face while Castillo is in prison, and everyone is against that in Peru and many countries of the world, not only in Latin America.
Okay. The fact that you came out right away pretty much, Libra Sankar, and talked about how you have Castillo that represents the indigenous population there in Peru, and the fact that he is the one that was able to edge out in the vote because he had the common people be on his side. Tell us the way that this has backfired for the ones that were in control of the major industries and how they felt threatened. And perhaps, given the fact that they have connections, and I'm just making the connection here, and whether it's accurate or not is up for you to tell us, and that these, for example, we know that Castillo brought in a lot of new ministers, and I'm guessing just that fact itself might have threatened the livelihoods of some of these people who, I don't know if I want to call them oligarchs or not, but, you know, the ones that were in power in different sectors and fields of the economy. And therefore, they obviously sided with the motion to try to oust Castillo. And that's where the U.S. connection also comes in, because you have Peru that has a lot of important natural resources, gold being the number one, from what I understand, natural resource of Peru. Is that a correct reading into this?
Yeah, that is an accurate reading. And in fact, I mean, Peru, since the colonial times, has been taken advantage of by foreign interests. And so what Castillo represents is indigenous working class, right? Like, this is somebody that when they were giving speeches, they spoke in the indigenous language, which brought a lot of the elected officials to anger, because their status quo is to speak Spanish, to kind of take on this more, it's not educated to speak like that, and this demonization of indigenous people in a country that's mostly indigenous, they just until Pedro Castillo, were not in positions of power. They weren't being appointed. Their perspectives were not being brought into policies. Their perspectives were not being brought into the proposed new constitution, which is something that has also been happening during the peak tide. A lot of these left governments have been rewriting their constitutions or codifying new laws. For example, Cuba just passed its family codes, and Chile, unfortunately, didn't vote, but they were looking to rewrite their own constitution. And so Pedro Castillo also represents and came from the Peru Libre Party, which, you know, he appointed a Marxist-Leninist in his cabinet, which unfortunately the individual had to step down because shortly after being put into his position, he got death threats. And this just shows how status quo the career politicians want to keep Peru. Again, Peru, with such rich economy and such access to resources, has been a country that has been overexploited and underdeveloped. And this works to the benefit of these career politicians and to foreign interests instead of the interests of Peruvians. And so Pedro Castillo represented and still represents a move towards a new type of Peru, a Peru that is moving left and closer to a Peru for Peruvians themselves. And so this scares people that don't want that to be the reality because it doesn't benefit their pockets. Okay. And so that's why millions of Peruvians are out in the streets protecting and asking for his release.
Thank you for that. Arnold August, author and journalist from Montreal, a pleasure. And Libra Sankara, thank you. Contributor at the Troika Collective from Miami. With that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight. From Miko Batagwe and the team, it's goodbye.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
path towards enlightenment.
In the name of God, the All-Compassionate, the All-Merciful. Salam and welcome to our latest episode of Path Towards Enlightenment, which is an endeavor to make you and us familiar with an easy and fluent explanation of God's final scripture to all mankind, the Noble Quran, that was revealed to the last and greatest of all messengers, Prophet Muhammad. Blessings of God upon him and his progeny. Last week, we started explanation of Surah Saf, which was revealed in Medina and declares God's love of all those believers who maintain the solid ranks or unity in selflessly and fearlessly defending Islam. It encourages the believers to stick together in support of God's cause and criticizes those who broke their word and those who argued against the faith. Moses and Jesus are among the prophets whose communities became fragmented. The rebellious were left to go astray and the faithful granted success. We continue from where we left you a fortnight ago, and here is Ayah 5.
وَإِذْ قَالَ مُوسَى لِقَوْمِهِ يَا قَوْمِ لِمَ تُؤْذُونَنِي وَقَدْ تَعْلَمُونَ أَنِّي رَسُولُ اللَّهِ إِلَيْكُمْ فَلَمَّا زَاغُوا أَزَاغَ اللَّهُ قُلُوبَهُمْ وَاللَّهُ لَا يَهْدِي الْقَوْمَ الْفَاسِقِينَ
When Moses said to his people, O my people, why do you torment me? When you certainly know that I am Allah's messenger to you? So when they swerved from the right path, Allah left their hearts to swerve, and Allah does not guide the transgressing lot. This ayah is a reference to the troubles given by the Israelites to Prophet Moses, despite the favors of God Almighty to them. They annoyed him to such an extent that they ridiculed the miracles he performed as magic and accused him of forging lies, despite the fact that they were certain of his mission as the prophet of God. The Israelites deviated from the straight path, and because of the extent of their evil deeds, the All-Merciful Lord left them to drift away from the path of truth. Thus, there is no affliction worse than deprivation of divine justice and the hardening of the heart to drift away from the path of truth. This ayah teaches us the following points. Number one. Familiarity with the accounts of the prophets makes us firm-footed on the path of God and inspires us to resist against hardships. Number two, the Israelites were ungrateful to the favors of God and disobeyed the prophets, including Prophet Moses, who delivered them from the tyranny of the Pharaoh. They thus deprived themselves of divine guidance. Now listen to Ayah 6 of the same surah.
وَإِذْ قَالَ عِيسَى ابْنُ مَرْيَمَ يَا بَنِي إِسْرَائِيلَ إِنِّي رَسُولُ اللَّهِ إِلَيْكُمْ مُصَدِّقًا لِمَا بَيْنَ يَدَيَّ مِنَ التَّوْرَاةِ وَمُبَشِّرًا بِرَسُولٍ يَأْتِي مِنْ بَعْدِ اسْمُهُ أَحْمَدُ فَلَمَّا جَاءَهُمْ بالبينات قالوا هذا سحر مبين.
And when Jesus, son of Mary, said, O children of Israel, indeed I am the messenger of Allah to you, to confirm what is before me of the Torah, and to give the good news of a messenger who will come after me, whose name is Ahmad. But when he brought them manifest proofs, they said, This is the plain magic. This ayah points to the message of Prophet Jesus, who conferred to the Israelites the teachings of Prophet Moses and gave the good news to them of the coming of the last and greatest messenger of God, that is Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. The name Ahmad mentioned in this ayah means praiseworthy. And despite the interpolation of the evangel, this prophecy of Prophet Jesus of the coming of the last prophet is preserved. This is evident by the word comforter used for Ahmad in the English translation of the Gospel of St. John, which says in verse 16 of chapter 14, He will give you another to be your comforter, who will be with you for the ever the spirit of truth. In verse 13 of chapter 16 of the same gospel, Jesus also says of the prophet to come after him, However, when he comes who is the spirit of truth, he will guide into all the truth. He will not speak on his own authority, but will tell only what he hears. And he will make known to you the things that are coming. Prophet Jesus performed miracles like raising the dead, curing the blind, molding birds out of clay, and infusing life into them by the command of the Almighty Creator. But the ever rebellious Israelites rejected these miracles as magic. Along with the pagan Arabs, they also ridiculed the miracles performed by the Prophet of Islam as magic. From this ayah we learn that, number one, every prophet used to confirm the mission of the past prophets and give tidings of the prophets to come after. Number two, Prophet Jesus has explicitly announced the universal mission of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. Number three, the prophecies of Jesus regarding Islam are all too evident in the Bible, despite the interpolation. And number four, the deniers of truth ridicule miracles as magic. We present you ayahs 7, 8, and 9 of Surah Saf in conclusion of this week's episode.
وَمَنْ أَظْلَمُ مِمَّنِ افْتَرَى عَلَى اللَّهِ الْكَذِبَ وَهُوَ يُدْعَى إِلَى الْإِسْلَامِ وَاللَّهُ لَا يَهْدِي الْقَوْمَ الظَّالِمِينَ يريدون ليطفئوا نور الله بأفواههم والله متم نوره ولو كره الكافرون هو الذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى ودين الحق ليظهره على الدين كله ولو كره المشركون.
And who is a greater wrongdoer than him who fabricates falsehoods against Allah while he is being summoned to Islam. And Allah does not guide the wrongdoing lots. They desire to put out the light of Allah with their mouths, but Allah will perfect His light, though the faithless should be averse. It is He who has sent His Prophet with the guidance and the religion of truth, that He may make it prevail over all religions, though the polytheist should be averse. These ayahs are reference to those evil persons who, when invited to the path of truth, resort to blasphemy, even against the Almighty Creator, and as a result are left by God to go astray. Allah sends His guidance freely, but withdraws His grace from those who willfully indulge in falsehood and debasing superstitions in opposition to the light of eternal unity and harmony, which is Islam. The divine light of guidance enlightens the seekers of truth in all times. It is a continuous process. It is inextinguishable, despite the gravity of the plots of the disbelievers to try to snuff it out. The Islamic doctrines are steadily gaining ground all over the world through promotion of the concept of justice, harmony, fraternity, human rights, and the real freedom for women, free from exploitation by men. Thus, to aversion of the disbelievers, the light of guidance of Islam, its progress towards ultimate triumph over all other religions, will illuminate the whole world with the advent in the end times of the Prophet's 12th and last infallible heir, Imam Mahdi, peace upon him, who will end corruption on earth and establish the global government of peace, prosperity, and justice. From these ayahs, we learn that, number one, it is a cardinal sin to ascribe lies to Almighty Creator and His prophets. Number two, the genuine teachings of Islam are light since they're enlightened hearts, minds, and souls. Number three, the enemies of humanity have always tried to put out the light of guidance through every means, but have miserably failed. Number four, Islam is the universal religion and will eventually prevail over all creeds and schools of thought. And number four, God Almighty, who sent prophets for the guidance of human beings, has promised the eventual triumph of Islam, even if the disbelievers are averse, with the reappearance of Imam Mahdi and his global government of peace, prosperity, and justice.
Comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio. Thank you.
This is IRIB English Radio.